The only place we can find this is the internet.
And you don't get off until you get home.
Why was there a BDSM pirate?
Please, can we take a moment and step to the bedroom?
You know, we could talk about that for an hour instead of Steel. We'd probably have a better show.
Hello, and welcome to Movie Smash!
Hello, and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash a movie whose source materials from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of All Panel Creations. With me today, the man who was caught smuggling knockoff Nerf guns and arcade machines, Jeremy Parmentier.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Parmentier, also the Retrovaniacs podcast. And the closest I ever came to a cool suit of armor was a Brewer's Halloween costume made out of a paper bag.
And also with me, a guy who wears a suit of armor around town because it's oh so comfortable in the crotch, Fergal Amayo.
It's the gooey patch. It's really the gooey patch that makes it all better. This is Fergal Amayo, your proprietor of Everything Awesome, Gotham Knights, comic, everything, where we get our nerd on. And I, too, enjoy steel. Steel with my fist.
Our movie tonight is 1997 Steel, starring Shaq O'Neal, Annabeth Gish, Judd Nelson, and Richard Roundtree. Directed by Kenneth Johnson, the same guy who directed the TV show The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, the TV show. I was like, which Hulk movie? Okay, yes. The TV
show. And funny, this movie actually pushed him back to TV where he lay in until time memoriam.
I think he also did like V, and he did lots of famous TV shows back in the 70s.
Yes, yes. I think I've got you beat on fun facts on this one. So we're going to go toe-to-toe on this one because I wanted to come correct. So I decided to come correct. That is the newest game plan we're putting out today.
Fergal, I always appreciate it when you do a little bit of research.
One man must stand up for the people.
Well, maybe the police aren't enough. Maybe we need a new kind of firepower for ourselves.
Gotcha, friend.
What exactly am I supposed to be doing here?
We make our own counterweapons to take out the ones in the streets.
To stop an enemy without hurting them.
And become a new breed of hero.
It might get a little dangerous.
I laugh at danger.
I boogie around danger like a soul-trained dancer.
With a will of iron, a heart of gold, and a body of steel.
Before we get talking about steel, Fergal, I wanted to say I picked up the trade of Absolute Batman based on your recommendation that it was a great series, and I have to be honest, I've loved every page of it.
Boom. So I'm just going to go ahead. I send my son this reel the other night, and it's just a guy at a toilet paper like dancing going, I'm right. I'm right. I'm just so right. I'm right. I'm always, always right. And so in that point, in the spirit of I'm glad that you enjoy it, it is really the freshest Batman story. If you think that's phenomenal, check out The Absolute Superman, and I would say the first 5-6 issues of Absolute Wonder Woman. After that, it gets a little wonky, but those first couple issues are just amazing.
Because I enjoyed Batman, I did pick up the trade that just came out for Absolute Wonder Woman. So I've got that started. I haven't even 2 pages in. So I'll let you know if I like that or not. But so far, very into what I read for Absolute Batman. Good.
Yeah,
good selection.
It's pretty dope. It's pretty dope. Yes, thank you. I have lived up to my nerd.
And that's it for tonight, everybody. Absolute Batman's the way to go. No, I still need to pick that one up myself.
You know, we could talk about that for an hour instead of Steel. We'd probably have a better show. But
well,
let's go ahead.
We could do both. I think in this particular instance, with its hour and 37 minutes runtime, we could do both effectively. But yes, let's go forward.
But actually, one last thing, guys. This episode is going to be coming out basically at our 2-year anniversary for the show. We've been doing this for 2 years.
Wow.
Cannot believe it.
I don't normally commit to things this long, but you know what? Let's do it.
Well, actually, before we jump in, I hate to put you guys on the spot, but looking back over the past 12 months, were there any episodes that were your top 3? You remember, yeah, being in or listening to her favorite movies.
Cemetery Man and Time Cop. Time Cop was probably our best episode, I think, where we really got a groove on.
Yeah, but I think that was our first year. I know, Fergal, you're probably like a little hazy on the details, but I think that occurred in our first year.
I'm going to be honest. I'm hazy on the details as far as what's which year.
I think that's a plus 50 problem. Does anybody here take Nereva?
No.
No.
And we're all going to suffer the same issues.
So why don't we jump in the movie tonight, though? We kind of picked normally we randomize a movie and just pick one right off the top, but we kind of leaned into Steel. Anyone want to tell our audience why we chose this movie?
Well, it's bad. and good at the same time. It's so bad, but it's also kind of good at the same time, but it's just so bad. And I am a fan of Steel. So I think anytime you can take it from the movie and actually give you a background of this character, I'll take that opportunity because he's phenomenal.
I thought we picked it because it was a very, very loose tie to the, you know, new Superman as far as being in the same universe. So instead of covering the new Superman, hey, let's cover Steel. All works
that,
the same.
That actually is the reason why we're like, you know what? We don't want to go pay for tickets. We're going to watch the knockoff version of Superman. And here we are with Steel.
This is, do we even, does the tattoo classify as a knockoff version of Superman? Because that's about the only tie into the movie.
Well, I do want to start with that. I know we haven't started the actual discussion of the movie, but there is, if you didn't know this is based on a DC character, there is nothing in the start of this movie that would lead you to believe that.
That was on purpose. That was on purpose. Let's save the meat for the potatoes. Yeah. But that was on purpose.
So why don't we just jump into it? Guys, Fergal, I know you were familiar with who Steel was before this movie, but Jeremy, were you?
I was not before it originally came out, I'm sure, although maybe in passing. But by now, you know, I've read enough of like the Death of Superman series to know who Steel is in the Superman comics world, but I was not familiar with him enough to say, like, does he have the same powers? I don't know. He's a metal guy with a hammer. He's the same guy in this movie. So I knew enough to know that it was a Superman / DC tie-in, but as I just mentioned, it's not really mentioned in this movie in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, my first encounter with Steel was from the animated movie Reign of Supermen, which was, you know, obviously takes place after the death of Superman. Great movie.
Yeah, great movie. Actually, a really good movie.
Hopefully we'll do it once on. But yeah, that was my first encounter with Steel. But so, guys, was this your first time seeing this movie?
No, I have seen this before. I've seen this before. This is, there was a period there where Shaq was everywhere. He was part of a group called Few Schnickens, which you probably haven't heard of, but it's one of the dopest rap groups.
Yeah, I have.
Oh, you've heard it. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, they've got some pretty sweet songs. And then he did the movie Kazam, and then he did this. And so after this, I was like, you should go back to playing basketball. And he did. And he became very successful all around.
Yeah, he's not known for his acting prowess. But although I will say, and we'll talk about it later, this is not a bad fit for him, I suppose. But no, I had not watched this before at all. This came out in 1997. I would have been 19 or 20, and I was 100% not interested in watching a Shaq-based superhero film. So I did not watch this until this podcast.
Fun fact, 2 weeks prior to this movie, I believe, or it might have been a couple months, Spawn came out. Spawn came out first. So that's why he's the third black superhero.
Yeah, Spawn, I think, was released 2 weeks before this was.
I'll give you extra points for who was number one. Anybody can guess it?
The first black superhero?
Yep.
I'm trying to
point. Was it Meteor Man?
There it is, Chris!
Are you really counting Meteor Man? Okay. I wasn't even thinking Meteor Man. That's
I threw that as a joke. I wasn't counting that one.
I was actually serious. Yeah, that Meteor Man was the first one.
So, Fergal, why don't you give us a little bit of history about this, about Steel?
He was introduced in 1993. Let me give you, there are two artists. There's an artist and a writer. I cannot remember their name, but I'm going to look them up because I want to sound very professional. They were Louise Simonson and John Bogolnova, who... Funny fact about him is the great-grandson of the Muriel Summing Bogonova, who made master murals and pictures in the time when people were stood still for 10 minutes to take a black and white photo. So he is really well known for that, and his great-grandson did the Superman. But John Henry Irons is a genius, is basically like Mr. Terrific, but with a hammer. Does everything, ends up, you know, going up and gets saved by Superman, life gets changed, becomes this amazing hero. It is considered one of the heroes, supporting heroes in the DC universe, and has been reborn in almost every iteration of the DC universe. So he's just got, you know, they've gone so many directions, Ironworks, his niece, all kinds of neat things. So it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, actually, I was reading somewhere that the actual copyright for the Steel character is older than the character of Steel, because DC, I guess, had another character named Steel long before that.
Yes, the guy who was from Detroit, who was the son of a particular soldier who underwent experiment to put steel underneath his body. And so he had a kind of like a captain, like a Marvel kind of spike in his head, a kind of a red, blue, and white uniform, and his name was Steel. But this Steel just kind of fit with that Death of Superman. That's when Superman 500, that's kind of when it came out, 1993. That's the whole, you know, that, and it spun itself off from there because it was probably behind, I think, Superboy, it was probably the most popular character that came out of the whole story.
Well, quick spoiler warning. If this is your first time joining us, just a heads up. We're going to discuss certain elements of the story that might be considered spoilers. However, I have a good feeling that even when we fully describe this train wreck of a movie, you're still not going to quite understand what happened.
I disagree with that. I think this is a very straightforward movie with some very... We'll talk about it. I think it's a very straightforward movie that we are easy to plot on.
It's a good movie.
That is a great transition. That's a great segue, Jeremy. What is the plot of this movie?
Simply put, it's the origin story of Steel, a.k.a. John Irons, who is played by Shaq. He takes his previous experience of working with top-secret military weapons and then his later skills at the local steel foundry to become a vigilante superhero named Steel to clean up the streets of Los Angeles when some very similar weapons to what he's working with in the military show up around the city, and then Steel suits up to save the day. Very simple plot to this movie.
And we just go cut right there, because that really is... Stupidity can lead to amazing things. This movie just takes it to a whole level. And Chris, fun fact, because he was shooting between his NBA season and other things and the Olympics, he only shot like 50 days, so he really just had an acting coach standing next to him going, you should sound like this. And if you look at him compared to like a Judd Nelson or like Richard Roundtree, you kind of get a completely different performance. Even Samantha Sparks.
Yeah, this felt like he was coming out of like a theater camp performing this. And now, mind you, this was not his first movie. It was, I think, his second or
Kazam.
Third.
Kazam was his first, which is even better.
But let's talk about Shaq. Not about Shaq, but Jeremy Henry Irons. How did you feel about Shaq's portrayal of John Henry Irons?
That's okay. I put my name as Jeremy Henry Irons for everyone who's not on this podcast right now, recording it live. John Henry Irons is Shaq. Also, I want to point out that the name John Irons becoming the hero Steel is fairly dumb. When we played a superhero role-playing game called Champions, I tried to pull a similar stunt where I named my character was the Time Master. He could control time, and his real name was Tim Masters, and no one knew his secret identity. That's about as dumb as John Irons being Steel. That said, I think Shaq was okay in this because it wasn't... I mean, this is a vehicle for Shaq. Yes, it's based on another character. It has another story. But this movie, I don't think, would have been made without Shaq. Period.
Here's the backup to that. First off, this movie was made because of Shaq. So I think we got to take that step back.
Right. Okay.
Kind of look at another fun fact, like the only purpose, because I'll give away a spoiler alert, the other actor considered for this was Wesley Snipes. So when they looked at Wesley Snipes, they were like, okay, we got Wesley Snipes or we got Shaq. They kind of clearly went with the sell more toys, more lunchbox type scenario. But John Henry Irons, the story in the comic, what made it unique, and I tell you a little bit special for me, was because the story of John Henry Irons is the guy who beat the steam train on dropping slugs in the railroad, like literally beat the steam train. And so he was just this massive man from a man and a history legend and all kinds of stuff. And so obviously you carry a lot of weight with that as someone, you know, a color, I like to say, in today's day and age. But they made him into Shaq, and everything about the character got lost in that process.
I do think that that Shaq's portrayal of the man John Irons, he doesn't come across as dumb. He's not supposed to be a comedic like foil to other characters in the movie. He's not like constantly staring at the camera and making Shaq faces. He is trying to play this straightforward, but not. He also, I don't think, thinks he's making the finest movie ever made. I think he's making a movie he wants to enjoy and have fun making. Right. So his character, he's in the military, he clearly knows his stuff in the military. When he goes to the steel thing, he's actually like, it's him working around a bunch of people in the steel mill and doing his, like, he comes across as a believable in this world, a believable version of this kind of larger than life character. I liked him in this role.
Every time he would say anything that sounded like techno jargon, it just sounded wrong coming out of that man's mouth.
Oh,
and
no,
it's not because Shaq, just the way he said it and the way he presented, like, it looks like he's reading off a piece of paper trying to like say the words.
Perhaps he is. That's one of those clear fun facts that may go on behind the door. Perhaps he was, because I believe every time he acted, there was someone 3 feet from him going, act like this. He did, to his credit, he did memorize a line. But memorizing something and delivering it are clearly two different sets of skills. And they require an intersection of both.
Let's talk about the funniest line like that, though. And it's not from Shaq. And it's not from John Irons. It's from Sparky, she's with him in the military.
She clearly wanted to jump on his bones. I don't know if anybody caught the please take me to bed vibe, but that girl was giving it off in step one, bro. Like, She must have wrote on her forehead. And for whatever reason, Shaq was not picking up what she was putting down.
He did later on. He kind of picked it up. Literally picked her up.
He did not. He picked her up. She stood up to him. She like raised it on up because she was like, I want to get me some Shaq love. And that is so intense. That moment, I'm like, okay, Shaq's going in for the kiss, which would have been a first, but Shaq did not go in. Shaq went in for the finger. And then you're like, what?
That comes across way worse. That's horrible.
Fuck. That was
horrible. I know what you mean because I saw it. They touched fingers like E.T., but you didn't explain it that way. You explained it in a much worse way. The point is, she's with him in the military, and then in the accident that kind of causes him to leave the military and cause the Judd Nelson's bad guy, Nathaniel Burke, to become the final bad guy of this movie, right? But this incident where they overheat, overpower a weapon and cause this explosion, she gets paralyzed. And he basically brings her back from despair and everything else to kind of become his oracle, his mastermind behind the scenes. They have cameras, you know, attached to his armor, and she's watching what he does and giving him advice and everything else. But later on in the movie, after they kind of talk about these weapons are on the streets and we're trying to figure out where to get them, she's like, there's only one place to find weapons like that. And it might as well have zoomed out on her face and she goes, the internet. And I laughed so hard. That's the best line of the movie where it's like, that's a bare minimum understanding. I know it's 1997. It means they had their CompuServe free hours or whatever, but still, it was still funny where it was just like, instead of saying like the dark web or something you'd expect now.
Was the security that bad at that time? Because they were surprisingly able to get into DOD defenses. I just need to keep that clear. And by the way, how did Judd Nelson sneak out super top secret military disc?
That's what I was getting to, Fergal. One second before you jump to that. There are two things. First off, that was not the best line of the movie, and I'll come to that in a second. But the DOD thing was that, so both she and Judd Nelson memorized the plans because they didn't leave with any records, and they both were able to recreate this technology. Mm-hmm. So how simple of a gun is this? I mean, I know people can build machines, but like to memorize the schematics of a high-tech weaponry system? So there were so, you mentioned lies, Jeremy. There were so many good lines taken out of context. Like, she didn't make this thing for pounding. And then Uncle Joe chimes in saying, but I like the shaft.
That's the one. Okay, that was, because I believe Shaq actually gave him that Shaq look and was like, did you really?
Oh, yeah.
That could have been on purpose. But he was like, you really rolled out shaft. And I felt all of it. Like, again, a guy who gets into a movie like this and figures, fuck it, I'm going to go shaft. And he went shaft.
Or when they're in the testing facility and the guy's like, my ass is on fire. And he goes, I thought I'd smell of nuts.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of bad lines. I was talking specifically the bad techno lines where it's always like, you know, we'll hack the system. Like, okay, sure. But this time it was funny. It was like, the only place we could find this is the internet. And it was really like, they looked up like how to buy this weapon. And it went to like the cheapest looking GeoCities page. It was awesome. I loved that. But no, there was a lot of great lines. The Uncle Joe line about the shaft, which makes sense because, as we mentioned, Richard Roundtree is in this movie, who was Shaft, and he is Uncle Joe.
He's Uncle Joe.
The bad guy, which is Judd Nelson, he was in the military. He's the one who's going to try to...
Did he not feel bad from the get-go? He was winking at the senator, putting the heat out. He killed the senator, and he just got, like, probation?
The most unbelievable part of this movie. He causes an accident. He's found guilty in the military court of law. Yeah, court martial, but he doesn't go to jail. He killed a senator. There's no way he wouldn't go to jail. And instead, he's like, we'll just let you leave with your uniform on, by the way, which is not how that's going to work. And then he goes out to his own secret thing.
I love how you just dialed up the gun. There's a little switch on the side. He moves it to red.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make any sense. Why would you make it? So it's like, well, we haven't tested it, but it's still here. And you just push it up. There's no safety. There's nothing. Yeah, no, it's pretty great. But he's such a good, like, cartoony bad guy, because there's no good what he's doing. He's intentionally like, no, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make myself as rich as possible and as powerful as possible. I don't have
talking about Judd Nelson.
Yeah, Judd Nelson's character.
When he killed the elevator and he was like, come on out. By the way, that guy who was in the elevator, I can't remember his name, but he created the Underworld comic series. He's a well-known artist and prolific comic guy. And also the werewolf in that movie, one of the big ass werewolves, the black guy. Hey, I got the super deep voice. You know that guy? Because there wasn't that many. Well, I mean, there was a lot of black guys. Actually, fun fact, the director thought it would be a good idea to hang out with South Central children in order to ensure
Fergal,
a proper dialect.
I know you're
dialect.
Just looking at the IMDb list right now.
No, I'm not.
Down the list.
I'm not. I'm literally
oh,
just.
Oh, you are.
Here.
I know you are. I saw the same list.
I'm not. I did. But I did do that earlier in the day. Like, I know they were afraid to shoot because of LA gangs. And I'm like, you're black, afraid of other black people. And I'm just like, they shot out spotlights. I'm like, this is no good. This is no good. What's going on? We made too real is too real. You don't have to shoot in South Central.
The one, there was a scene though with Sparky is in the junkyard and she's sitting there and I forgot what was happening, but all of a sudden it's in sort of like during a little montage of getting ready to go fight crime.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the song about, there's a song that comes on about standing up. Mm-hmm. And it's hilarious music. Watching her in a wheelchair and a song about standing up starts playing.
Well, why did you play? Okay. The biggest thing to me now that I've watched it again, for preparation of this movie, that I figure since I've got two people actually making time to discuss this, let me ask them, why in those montage moments would you bring gospel music in? Was there a thought process that someone was like, can we change it to something a little bit more upbeat? Why do we bring the word into that? Like, what's going on there?
I thought it was because, again, they tried to make you feel like John Irons is truly a good guy. And how are you truly a good guy? If there's a religious context to what you're doing. If it's like, it's not even like he thinks he's better than thou or whatever. It's like, no, he's a church going guy. He reveres his grandmother. Like, he's very concerned for, like, that I thought made sense in that section. Because it's making him truly like a good guy.
But that's an energy shifter and an energy sifter.
Well, I was watching this with a buddy of mine, and it felt like, he brought this up, I believe, but it felt like very sort of like a nod to sort of blaxploitation movies of the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the best movie, I was just watching it over the weekend. I happened to catch it on late Saturday night. I don't know if you fellas have seen, again, let me not make assumptions. Have you guys seen Belly? Best gangster movie, black gangster movie outside of Boys in the Hood, Belly. There's nothing
better. I have not seen that.
That movie just, it starts somewhere and you don't get off until you get home. You're taking the whole ride through. It just never slows down at all.
What did you guys think about so Judd Nelson is looking for a place to, I guess, make these weapons and then sell these weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes and finds that arms dealer who smuggles these weapons inside of arcade machines.
Yeah, that was weird.
That character, the owner of that facility?
Oh, he was going to die soon. I think Judd Nelson was already plotting his demise as he walked in
Do you remember what his name was?
No.
Big Willie.
Oh, yeah, Big Willie. But I thought he called him Little Will the first time, and then he called him Big Willie later once he was working with him.
Like, Judd Nelson was overtly threatening. I mean, did anybody else get... I mean, he was overtly threatening. What... Do these people just not know an overt threat? Like, don't fall. Like... Get out the elevator. Bye. Like, overt threatening. Like, oh, shoots that guy. Big Willie.
Yeah, Jeremy, I think you said earlier, Judd Nelson just plays a cartoon villain.
But I liked it. I like that this movie has, it steals the only person in this that has even close to what you'd say is superpowers. And his are more of a Batman-style superpower, right? I mean, he's a big guy, and he's really smart, but he's built a suit, and he has all these special weapons and all these special technologies. But it's more of a Batman-style superhero. So to not have to have another supervillain that has, you know, oh, this guy can, you know, breathe fire. He built a suit that does fire. Like, yeah, he does have these other weapons, but it's just basically him against an arms dealer. It reminded me of like the first Iron Man movie, but without the ending sequence where he has his own suit, or even like Lex Luthor in a very cartoony version. Like, I liked that the fact that Steel was just up against someone trying to ruin his city and he's going to stop it.
I can dig that, but I mean, would you not want that? That gun that shot the bolt into the thing and then like fly the way he flew, because that felt like Peter Pan. Was he supposed to fly?
The soundburst gun? I love the soundburst gun.
Well, no, not the soundburst gun. The one that had the hook, the steel
grappling
bolt.
Grappling hook?
Yeah, bolt. Yeah, and then the way he came up there, like he had to seriously have his legs in a certain position in order to make that move.
It was goofy, but I liked the fact that also that same steel thing that he uses, the steel grappling hook thing, is not strong enough to hold up his weight and breaks almost immediately. I love that. I thought that was a good touch.
And so let's just add to that, Chris. I'm going to take the juice from you today. If I'm not, I had this on the tip of my tongue. I was going to take the juice from you.
That he couldn't have his own stunts?
Damn it. I need to speak faster. That's my problem right now.
It's because you're reading the internet. Is you're reading the trivia
page. No, I'm not
reading.
I'm
right
actually
at
looking.
It.
I'm looking at the characters. I'm looking at Shaquille O'Neal, and I memorized that earlier. So you were looking right at. That's how you got the edge, man. I'm not looking at it.
No, because I know what you're looking at.
I know. I'll snapshot my screen. I'm completely. I have my hands off my computer, and I'm looking at the.
It's okay.
The scene.
It's okay. I told Jeremy and I were talking about this earlier too. Like, Yeah, Scheck did all his own stunts. I mean, where he's like parkouring across the rooftops.
Well, they couldn't find a 7-foot-1 double, so they made everything further away. I wanted to understand how this whole process came to effect, because what we got needed to be understood, dissected backward.
Well, the best part about it is that, so there's that scene where I guess he's using that grappling hook and he's like moving up and he's like in an awkward pose. I can't say this is true, but I feel like they just added, just attached a dummy to it that hadn't, because the guy's, he's not like hanging right.
Well, they couldn't find a double for him. So I mean, 7-foot-1. Yeah. I mean, so what do you do at that point? You gotta, although if he was like me, he would have just took the chance.
But I got to say, when he's chasing that other kid through the train yard, it is the most, it's probably the slowest run, the slowest chase scene I've ever seen.
No, the scene went in Austin Powers with the steamroller slowly coming at him. That's a little slower than this, but almost.
I guess that would win. That would win, yes. I did enjoy, though, there's that helicopter scene.
Yes.
And they're like shooting at that and taking it down. What were your guys' thoughts about that? That sort of big final battle.
Well, he saved the black police officer who in turn saved him when he was in a lineup. So I feel like that was major plot stuff that we had to get in there. And I liked it. I liked the fact that the guy with the scribbles teeth, the really gold teeth, and the very large gold chain decided to shoot upward and take a helicopter down.
Well, and it allowed them to frame Steele, right? He shows up, the police come on the scene, he's wearing this armor and has this kind of weapon. So they're like, no, he shot that helicopter down, even though the one police officer saw that he in fact did not. You know, that was easy to frame him later, which brought him into, you know, towards the end of the movie to get him into the police station.
So there's at least a suspicion he was Steele, because I mean, how much police work do you have to do to find the only 7-foot-1 black guy in the entire city?
Right.
His face is uncovered.
Were there forensics involved? Were there?
That was the part, Chris, I was going to bring up. His face is like 3/4 uncovered.
Wow. And I love the fact that he fights. And there's that that Latino gang he bumps into, and they start shooting at him, and all he hit is his crotch.
Yeah.
And that's before he turns his balls.
Yeah, they really. I mean, were they aiming for his balls?
I think it's just gravity.
Just where your eyes go. I got it.
Where your eyes go. But it's eye level. Shaq's crotch is eye level. For these guys.
That's true. If I saw him now, it would be eye level.
Well, here's the thing. He's got 5 PhDs. He owns north of 300 separate businesses like Krispy Kremes and all car washes. Guy is a multi-millionaire at this point.
I think he owns a bunch of Domino franchises, too.
He owns, sits on the board of directors of Papa John's. I mean, the guy's got...
Maybe it's Papa John's.
Yeah, he's just got massive juice. And so he parlayed most guys, and let me just say it differently. Very few people can take and sustain long-term lucrative growth from a basketball career. He did extremely well. He did Michael Jordan well. He did really, really well. He's made more post-basketball than he ever did in basketball.
He's a good commenter. He's on all the sports shows. Like he's become a larger than he was in basketball outside of the court. He's doing more now. I was going to say that's my fun fact of research. You know, he played basketball for. So I guess you guys all knew that. That's good. For a scene that was actually, you just mentioned the helicopter scene. Before that, the first time he comes out, which, you know, the first 45 minutes of the movie, there is no stealing outfit. He shows up at about 45-minute mark, and he saves that rich couple that is getting robbed by a regular villain. But they made
also
them kind of old-timey.
Also a plot point, because they were like, that's a scary black person, and he's not a scary black person, which meant they stood up for him.
They did. They were part of the lineup that helped.
So it means you don't have to be scared of black people. We are good too.
But specifically the way that couple looked, the way they were dressed, do you think that was supposed to be a nod to Batman?
Yes. And they said they used Oracle as a nod to Barbara Gordon. They actually said that. The director was like, because he took this, he did not want to make a Steel story. And Warner Brothers was unhappy with the Steel story. So they distanced themselves from the story. He took the very bare amount he could, and then he decided to create a hodgepodge of different stories to make this thing.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere he wanted to make a blue-collar Batman or someone along those lines.
Yeah, you're going to end up with something. Or like someone said a Black Panther, although Black Panther was not at that point. But they just tried to, you know, I mean, and clearly, well, I think it was bad. So what I will say out loud is this was one of the worst movies ever, but it was also one of the best movies ever, and I could still watch it again. Even though I'm like, oh my God. But I could watch it because it's just Steele. And it's great to see that character on screen portrayed by that guy in that fun with, because it supports him completely because everybody else around him is so completely over the top that he doesn't have to quite, he's almost playing the straight guy to everybody over the top.
Now, there was a Batman and Robin reference at the very end of the movie. Did you catch that?
I think so. I know that the young brother was like, I'll be Robin. And he was like, yeah, I remember that one. But I'm telling you, let's go back to the Sparks thing again. Two things that really caught me out. Number one, she didn't just make the weapons for old Steel there, because that chair had some capability.
Oh my God.
Let's not pretend that
chair?
Wasn't.
Gotta
let's
talk
not
about
pretend
the rocket
that,
chair.
Not pretend that chair did not have capability. What started as a chair when she fell out, and then they were like, Uncle Joe was like, hold on. She's going to get back. Oh, no, it was Shaq. Shaq was like, hold on, Uncle Joe. And she got back in it. She made a chair after that because she had sonic emitters, pulse things. She was ready to go. And a rocket. When did she have time to put a rocket in the back of her chair?
And also, right? She's going straight at a wall.
Yes. So this is the very end of the movie. They've got Steel and Judd Nelson's character in this warehouse. They've got all these buyers for his weapons. He's made Steel get there. He's tricked him to come there so he can kill him in front of these people and show them how effective his weapons are. And in order to stop Steel from immediately just doing whatever he can to get out of there, he's got, what's her name?
Sparks.
He's got Sparks captured in her wheelchair. They don't notice all this extra crap strapped to the wheelchair. They don't even worry about it. But out of nowhere, there's been nothing that would hint that this occurs. She essentially is the secret thing that stops this from happening and stops him from dying, because she does. She has sonic emitters and blasters and a rocket tied to the back. And it's the goofiest thing. Honestly, this movie is goofy, but I kind of like it. And I thought it was actually a fairly positive movie, but that part was so ridiculous. I was like, that's everything in this movie is ridiculous. That was so ridiculous that I was like, I might have to not, there's 10 minutes left. I may not finish this because that part with that was so ridiculous.
She made it through. I mean, you got it. I mean, she made it through. I mean, why would you? So as someone who just kind of thinks and try to think like normal, I don't know, down the straight path, why wouldn't she develop these weapons? But then also in the same breath, why wouldn't Judd Nelson check the chair if she had these? Okay, well, we might want to remove that. That looks like a sonic emitter. There's some parts in there that feel familiar.
She does this at the end of the movie. After she makes this into a rocket chair that shoots missiles, she's like, I could just make it so I could stand up. Like, that seems like it'd be the first thing she would do is like, I'll make it into legs. That's what I'll do. But she does that first.
She wanted to, this is why I, this Shaq is love. Where, that's exactly where I thought, that's there. I don't know. Shaq is a very spiritual guy, so a lot of love for that. But he would not I think they wanted a kiss scene, but I think he was like, hell no. Because and you could just, she was trying to hide it, but she did not either. She was way over the top because she just had eyes that were like, please, can we take a moment and step to the bedroom? What are we doing here? Can we take a break? Are you free?
I didn't
for
think
a little
about
bit?
Any of that. I think that's something that only Fergal noticed in this movie. I thought it was a very wholesome friendship. She was, it's basically like her brother. That's how I took it.
I don't know. She looked like she was really into him.
I did have a big shaft.
I mean, at least according to Richard Roundtree. And we hit it all in one podcast. You're welcome, everyone. Go on.
So this movie's 97 minutes long. Do you need more Steel?
No.
No.
But I thought this for, okay, to go to, because those are two different questions. Is the movie long enough for this story? Yes. I normally don't like origin stories, but Steel is not a character you necessarily would know. And they didn't follow the original origin anyway. They did their own thing. And I actually think it's fine because you get all the reasons why he can actually, in this world of this movie, would actually have the abilities to build this suit and have these weapons and have the support team and everything else that he has. And again, he's not taking on, you don't have to introduce a supervillain that has these other powers. At no point does Judd Nelson accidentally fall into some goop and get laser eyes. It's just a guy who's bad from the get-go, and he's the same bad guy at the end. He's just built these weapons that he already had. He's just managed to rebuild them and slightly modify them more and sell them again. So I think this movie is a good length for this. I felt like it's a good introduction to this character, and by the end I was satisfied with he says I'm not doing this anymore, I'm done, you'll never see me again, when he's talking to the military guys at the end, secretly over the phone or whatever.
This Arnie voice.
Well, that was the Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't even think they were trying to triangulate who was Steel or what, that was Steel reporting in for these weapons and turning this guy in, which, by the way, shame on the military for not picking up on the evil guy vibes on the way out the door.
Well, they court-martialed him, apparently let him go free after killing a senator. That's how it goes. But it's still like he was like, you're never going to see me again. And it wasn't like he then was doing something else. It's like, other than the fact that that he was still hanging out with the same people, he was just back in his normal clothes. He's at his grandma's new restaurant. He's doing this could have been a self-contained box if it did not have the DC theme. If you didn't know that, this is a fine standalone film that would lead an opening for a sequel if he needed to. But it wasn't like, oh, now I get to take on the big bad guy. And then it, you know, ends. It ends with, I'm not doing this anymore. I've done what I need to do. I've cleaned up the city. The end. I like that for a set 97 minute.
You only get three real DC inferences in the entire movie. The beginning, the hammer, and the tattoo. That's it. That's all they allow. I mean, really, truly, go watch the movie again. Check out what I'm saying. Three inferences of DC whatsoever in this entire movie. So, you know, if you weren't paying attention, you'd miss the shit out of them because there was only three. So yeah. I think they created this movie on its own. You don't really need DC for this movie. This is because anyone who likes John Henry Irons, like myself, is going to be like, this is not like what you said, Chris, earlier with the whole where he's introduced in the Reign of Superman. That's about as close as you're going to get. And it's actually closer to the New 52. So it's a different take on John Henry Irons at that point. It's much more kind of Mr. Terrific like. But this is what it is. This is basically. If you like a Shaq movie, this is going to be for you. Like, it's a Shaq movie. If you want a Shaq movie where, out of all the actors in the entire movie, he's the guy who plays it like, the Naked Gun guy, Frank Drebin, or the younger Frank Drebin Jr. Like, if you want the guy who plays it straight while everyone goes over the top, this is the movie for you.
I think this is, I mean, compared to the other movies we saw from this same time frame, so pre-MCU, current DC, even more recent DC universes. This is one of the first movies that we've watched that is a superhero that already existed that they didn't try to go super dark and edgy, other than like the original Superman. And
that was Shaq. Arguably that the first couple of
Batman movies. That's what I mean, though. That's what I liked about this. This reminded me of how I would have felt watching Superman as a kid, right? It was like, it was fun enough. There were little funny parts, but it wasn't supposed to be slapstick and it wasn't supposed to be super tongue in cheek. And it also wasn't this really edgelord dark take on even the bad guy. Was just like, he's a comedic bad guy, but it's other than like, you know, he kills people in the elevator and he shoots the arms dealer like at the thing. But it wasn't extremely bloody and graphic. It's kind of very much cartoony. I don't know. I thought this movie felt like a classic superhero movie in feel, not in the quality of the film, but at least in the, I would show my children this and not feel bad about level, where a lot of other superhero movies we've done, I'm like, I don't know. If my kid was eight, would I let them watch Ghost Rider? Probably not.
You might be confusing this with the fact that this was marketed purely as a family fan adventure. Like, that was the whole, I mean, again, if you think about the other choice of actor for this movie and literal serious consideration, you know, obviously, Chris, you think I'm looking at the website, but now I'm looking at you. It is Wesley Snipes, but if you think about the direction that could have been in with this was a Shaq, they built this entire thing around Shaq. I mean, the entire script was written for his particular benefit, and they clearly demonstrated that by working around his schedule. And this was a sell your stuff type. They were selling toys, family friendly, very much. I mean, that's part of the reason why him and Sparks had such a platonic relationship and why it felt so over the top, because it was really marketed towards being in different lunchboxes and toys.
I hear that, the whole kids thing, but why was there a BDSM pirate in this movie then?
Which one was that? I forget again.
It was the guy with the gold teeth and the chains. He had a pirate patch, and then when he goes to the bar to find them as John Irons, not as Steel, he is wearing like this weird BDSM pirate outfit. I think it's just because if you're talking about gangs that would have been in movies in the late 90s, especially if they were supposed to be earlier in the 80s and 70s, they all dressed like that. So he was just a holdover. From the Warriors, he came in.
I knew that was coming.
The one thing we kind of didn't talk about yet, but the wardrobe of some of these characters, Judd Nelson's characters, do you guys notice how often that man changed costumes?
It was always suits, wasn't it?
Yeah, he always had different suits.
It was like the fashion level changed throughout the thing. It's sort of like his army uniform, then a basic suit.
What happened to the high suit?
And then it became like
suit.
These high fashion suits.
Yep, all the way to the end, and that's when he shoots the other guy with the specialty gun. He somehow got this scar on the side of his face. Did he have that when he was tested, or did he get that?
He had it from the test. He got it. He had it. He got it when the disaster happened that caused him to leave the army, when he killed the senator caused an explosion. He didn't have it till then.
John Henry noted his objection to that thing. Said, "Why are we letting him go?" Well, that's what the military is doing. They're court martialing him and just letting him leave.
Like, that's bad enough. He's been court-martialed. Like, it's not bad enough. He killed a senator. Like, without that, I could see it. If it was just somebody getting hurt, they'd be like, okay, sure. But no, he killed a senator. You can't. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
So back to the original question. I think the pace, the length of the movie, just fine.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's fine for this. Yes. Now, the second follow-up question, which I think you have down further, is do you need more steel? And I would say no. I think this not is fine as a one.
Not unless they get it back to where it belonged. Not unless they, I mean, it depends on what happens in the DC universe. Like, I would not be in a rush to see him, because if you're going to make this character just like Blade, make it right.
How'd you guys feel about the soundtrack?
I like the soundtrack. The theme it starts with that is just close enough to Superman's theme, but not quite. It has the same, like, they probably just took the notes and reversed it, to be honest, because it has a very Superman-y feel. So you could kind of tell, like, oh, it's a superhero movie. It's that theme to it. And then other parts, though, were definitely, as you kind of mentioned, more of a throwback to those 70s movies. And the blaxploitation movies, they definitely had that Shaft kind of feel to them for other parts of the movie, and the gospel parts. So I thought the soundtrack made sense without being overly cartoony, like, oh, yeah, we're trying to make this for, you know, for black neighborhoods. Like, it was there, but it wasn't too much.
I think the soundtrack was okay. I didn't really pay as much attention to it as clearly my cousin Jeremy Henry Irons. But as I, John Henry Irons, I'll tell you, I think it was okay. I only got stuck on the gospel music because the mood changed, right? We were getting into, you know, John was hammering the same piece of wood or same piece of metal through the entire, I think he was looking at the edges because that same piece of metal through the entire process, that montage, and then all of a sudden he had a helmet. And they were all, oh, and he had the leg patch and then the arm patch. And they had the helmet that just, I was like, okay, is that that's your helmet? Okay, I got you.
Yeah, I've never done metal work like that, but I imagine, I thought his skill set would be a little bit better by this point. It really looked like he was wearing a trash can. What could they have done to make this movie better?
You know, they make a lot of good, I mean, really the replacement to this movie today would be a movie like Samaritan. Which is this movie if you went another direction, just really different direction. So do you remake a Shaq movie? Unless you're making Steel comic accurate, don't make this movie.
I think this is a really good equivalent to like a bad horror movie night. You watch it with your friends. Like you mentioned, you watch it with a friend, Chris. I think I would have much rather watched this with somebody else my age who enjoys superhero movies, because it is funny. And it was, you can tell the intent was to make a movie that was enjoyable, but not to make a movie that was overly serious, but not to make a comedy. This is not supposed to be, you know, nonstop laughs. It is an enjoyable movie because it clearly fails at many different parts. His costume looks a little bit goofy, and the lines are delivered badly in a lot of the cases, especially with Shaq himself. The line, like the internet I mentioned earlier, there's lots of stuff in there like, but in a way that's totally watchable. I think this is that's what I like about the movie, that if you're going to fail, you got to fail the right way to make this watchable thing that isn't trash. And this does that, you know, so if you're going to make it differently, I don't know if there's a way to make this character in a movie work without other connections, like to have the Superman connections, to have the connection to the death of Superman and rebirth of Superman storyline, to have all those things they cut out of this. I don't know how you and make it more serious. I don't know how you do that. Well, I don't think you need a movie just about Steel at all, to be frank. You have it in the connotation of what I just mentioned, or you have him as an ensemble character with a bunch of other superheroes, and it would be fine. But you don't need a movie all about just Steel. This works because it kind of fails. And that's weird to say, but I like it for that reason.
Well, I think it's you sort of touched on it. You like it failed, but I think it's gotten better with age.
It made 1.8 million. Yeah, like it was a stupid number. But Lois and Clark showed the need for Steel. Lois and Clark, which is really one of the best TV, most underrated Superman portrayals, Tyler Hoechlin, who does an amazing job in that movie, and Moe Baker, whatever his name, who plays John Henry Irons from Another Earth. That's a great show.
But it's not just about him.
Yeah.
If he'd be good in other things tied to Superman.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I agree with you, Jeremy. You got to bring this character, you have to bring him as part of something.
True. And as I was saying before Fergal cut me off, the
sorry, I had to do that.
Was that I don't think you can make it better without ruining what it is, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, I
because if you try to like make them better actors, it wouldn't have that lasting power of cult classic. It's good because it's bad. Feeling to it. You would have to go really good. You have to improve it so much it would be to make it passable as a good movie to get it there. Because I think it's good as a bad movie.
No, this is a Shaq movie. I am a Shaq fan. You know, I think Kazan was horrible, but it was Shaq. But you can't not... Shaq is a good person through and through. If people who know this man, people who see him in his daily walks and his daily life, you said, Chris, you've met him. People who have, I mean, he's a good man who does good things. And he continues to strive to do that with everyone he's around. So, you know, the movie was painful sometimes, but it was so funny that it went through real well. And I just don't think you can do that unless you do what Jeremy said.
Yeah, I never saw Kazam. I saw Shazam, but never Kazam. But when it comes to this movie, do you guys, we kind of touched upon it a little bit, but James Gunn is obviously rebooting this universe. Do you think Steel should make an appearance? Not necessarily get his own movie, but make an appearance in the new DCAU universe?
I trust in James Gunn.
Yeah, no, I again, as a member of a group of superheroes doing or a tie to Superman, I think he totally makes sense. So sure.
I'm going to trust in James Gunn. I'm going to keep it, you know, the guy knows what he's doing. Right. There's a lot of conjecture, but I'm going to trust in his vision. And to your point, I think, Jeremy, when you said earlier that you love the Absolute Batman recommendation, there's so much source material that, and because they're finally giving you an alternate branch of different characters, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. You he obviously knows what he's doing because he made Henry Cavill Batman.
Yeah. Was that a
TikTok announcement? No, he's not Batman. So should people go out and find this movie?
If they can find it without renting it, if it comes back to TNT, sorry.
I would say sure with the star behind it, because the star is in the same way I'd recommend, you know, tons of bad movies to watch with other people around. This is enjoyable. It's not slow. There's plenty of bad movies I've watched where it's so slow people lose interest and walk away. You're not going to do that in this movie. But if you sit there and try to watch it as like, I'm going to watch a serious superhero movie. Yeah, 99 out of 100 times, you're going to be disappointed with this. But if you go into it thinking like, I want to watch something that kind of fails in a fun way, this is a great movie for that. So a group movie night, perfect for this.
Yeah, this is a bunch of buddies over. You got a six-pack of beer, having some fun. Go watch. I'd say find the discount bin. I wouldn't buy it. I actually was looking for it to add to the collection, that, you know, to pick it up. And the only copies I could find were, you know, older versions of it. And I think, Jeremy, I think this is the one where it was like $45 or something.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's what you paid for this thing?
Oh, I did not pay for this thing.
Oh my God.
I'm just saying that if you want a copy right now, because the studios are not making it, is you have to pay like $45 somebody who happened to have it on their shelf.
Ugh, that's just some ugly stuff.
Yeah. So in closing, guys, how would you rate this movie?
I'm going to give it a half hammer with a shaft rubbed by Richard Roundtree.
So I'm going to break our own rules and come up with a different rating for this. So I have a friend that does a movie review site called 1000misspenthours.com. El Santo is his game. He goes by there. And he has a unique scale I've seen nowhere else. It's from 5 to -5, where 5 is so good, you can't miss it. And a -5 is so bad, it's the best thing you've ever seen. And so it's that same scale where it's so bad, it's good, but he actually has a number scale for it. So I'm going to give it -3/4 of a thumb. I think it's almost so good that it's almost so bad you can't not see it. It's great, but it's not like the absolute best version of that. So it's a -3/4 thumb.
It's like a horseshoe rating.
Yeah.
So far on the other side, it's almost back to the good side.
Right. And this is 3/4 negative thumbs.
Yeah. Jeremy, I have to second on that one. This is not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
And if you were going to go watch this thing saying, you know what, I want to go find a good classic of a superhero film and it's going to take me back to that nostalgia period, this is not that film for you. Like you said, Spawn came out before that, which was not the greatest film of all time, but I think it may have been better than this one.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
This one, you are going to laugh watching. Like, if you've got a friend with you and you're watching this movie, you will laugh. There's just parts that just are so bad that you have to wonder, did they do it on purpose or not? And I don't think they did, which makes it even better.
Well, the dialect coaches were the best. When you read the article that they were talking to South Central children to get the proper dialect, you're like, oh.
Yeah, was it the writer sat there watching kids play ball to get the dialogue for it?
He had them as consultants. Like, what? They were on set. They were probably had assistants. Give me a pastrami on rye now, stat.
And they probably gave him some really bad advice as a joke. They were trolling him. That's what this movie is. It's just a big troll. Well, guys, I think that's what we got for tonight. Jeremy, before we head on out, where can people find you?
You can find me here every other week reviewing movies On Movie Smash, you can also find me on the Retrovaniacs podcast, reviewing video games that also have some positives and some negatives. Plus, my band Subtastic should have an album out very soon, our follow-up album, which would be called Warlords of the Mid-Atlantic. So look for that before December.
And Fergal, if people are looking for you in a giant iron suit, where can they find you?
Well, first off, they'd have to find the giant iron suit. I suggest magnetometers or magnet detectors, like little doo-doo-doo-doo. So other than that, you can find me at GetYourNerdOn.com, Gotham Knights, Instagram, TikTok. And yeah, keep your eyes out because we are putting together a book. We are putting together new things, and Gotham Knights still returns.
And for me, you can always find me in all panel creations. We're always over there building some piece of nerdy furniture. I want to thank our listeners for spending some time with us today. And if you think Shaq should reprise his role as Steel for James Gunn, send us a note over at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm right. I'm right. I'm just so right. I'm right. I'm always, always right.